Hello, everyone. I am Taka. We usually attend Charlotte Chapel in Newtown, but it's great to be here today. Today we are looking at the Book of Exodus, chapter 3, as a part of, I understand it's a part of series on the calling of Old Testament characters. So you have already looked at Abraham and Joseph, and today we come to the calling of Moses in the Book of Exodus, chapter 3. We could certainly focus on Moses' life and his character in this chapter, but what struck me in this chapter as I prepared this sermon is the character of God. So I would like to draw our attention to God's character today in this great text in chapter 3 in Exodus. I read through this chapter, so please ask yourself a question. What God is like, and what is the God's characters reflected in this chapter. Please look at this passage. I will start from chapter 2, end of chapter 2, the verse 23 to the end of chapter 3. So chapter 2, verse 23. During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. Now, Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire, out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. Then he said, do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, but I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, had sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob, has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, and Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey, and they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of Hebrews, has met with us, and now please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And when you go, you shall not go empty, but each woman shall ask of her neighbor and any woman who lives in her house for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. You shall put them on your sons and on your daughters. So you shall plunder the Egyptians. So I would like to highlight three characters of God reflected in this passage. They are holiness of God, the first one. The second one, compassion of God. And the third one, the sovereignty of God. So three characters that stand out from this passage. So the first one, holy character of our God. Our God is holy. The holiness of God is a major theme running throughout really the Bible in general, but the book of Exodus is particularly clear on this. This is clear from the special name that was revealed to Moses in the verse 14, the very special name that was revealed to Moses, we can look at verse 14. There, Moses was asking God a question. When I go to the people of Israel and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I say to them? So we see the answer in the verse 14. He answered, God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. So this is a very special name that he taught Moses. So this statement, I am, and I am who I am, come from the verb to be or to exist. So, and various meanings are suggested by the scholars, and I'm sure Dr. Eimer can give us a whole lecture on this, in this name. But basically it means he is self-existent. He's completely on his own, and he doesn't depend on anything else. And he's eternal, he exists forever, and he doesn't change, he's unchanging. So, in other words, he's set apart, he's holy, and he's set apart from us and other gods that were invented by humans and that were familiar to the Egyptians. So from this statement, I am who I am, the repeated name Yahweh in the Bible was formed from this statement. So we know that the Jews regarded this Yahweh name so holy that they tried not to pronounce this name. So it's a very special name that he taught us here. So the Jews, instead, they decided to read it as Adonai in Hebrew. It means just Lord or Master, and that's why we see this word written as Lord in the capital. So whenever we see the Lord in the capital, all in the capitals, we know that this name, special name, is used in the Bible. So in this name, which was revealed to the Moses, God is holy. So this is clear also from the actual word holy is used in this passage. Please look at verse beginning of this passage, verse 2-6 in this chapter. God appears to Moses in the form of a burning bush in this famous story. The bush was burning, but it wasn't consumed by the fire and just kept on burning. How mysterious and strange that was for Moses. And when Moses approached the bush and see what was going on, he was told in verse 5, Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. So I like this, the fact that Moses was told to take off his sandals. Do you take off your shoes in your house in Chinese context? I think I understand that it's the case. We do in Japan, and we don't like entering any house with our shoes on. I feel a little bit uncomfortable. And there's certainly a reason for us. We used to, in Japanese tradition, we used to eat and drink while sitting on the floor, and we sleep on the floor. So that's really why it makes sense to take our shoes off. And we even have an interesting Japanese expression translated as entering others' hearts with their shoes on. Do you have that expression in Chinese? So it's basically meaning it's insensitive and rude to enter others' hearts with your shoes on. So you have to be sensitive. You have to respect others. So that expression is crossing the line. So the fact that Moses was told to take his sandals off is makes sense for us. By taking off his sandals, Moses was to pay his respect and honor to the person who was present, his holy God. He must recognize that the holy God is there in the burning bush by taking sandals off. And what was Moses' response here? We can look at his response to his presence. He had to hide his face. It says that, for he was afraid to look at God in verse 6. So this is really very common response we see in the Bible when people, whenever people encounter this holy God. We can remember that Joshua, for example, fell on his face to the earth and worshipped the commander of the army of the Lord. It's a very mysterious, another similar encounter with God that Joshua had before going into Jericho. Joshua was also told the same thing: take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. And we can also recall Isaiah's encounter with God when he was called to ministry. You remember it was in the temple, and the seraphim was calling to each other, holy, 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 and he was really struck, and he couldn't stand before this holy God. So the acknowledgement that God is holy, so this is something I think we need to recover. Awareness or a strong sense of awe or reverence before the holy God of the Bible. He's so separate from us and so utterly beyond and above us that he's approaching, the idea of approaching his presence is a bit really uncomfortable and even threat for our security. So, yeah, of course, this is not a particularly comfortable idea, and which makes us uneasy and uncomfortable. But I think this is something that we have lost sight in our church life or Christian living, and so let us recover this right sense of fear and trembling before this holy God as we continue our Christian living. So that's the first character I wanted to highlight. The second, this chapter does not only describe God as holy, but also compassionate. He exactly knows what we are going through, and he strongly sympathizes with us. This is very surprising. Holiness, because holiness and compassion don't really go together in our limited thinking. We tend to think that if God is holy and separate from us, he wouldn't be compassionate in our thinking. So it's important that we need to hold these two characters together. And only when we see God as holy, God's love, or other God's characters as loving and compassionate, compassion begin to have power on us. Look at verses immediately before the chapter, end of chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 23-25. There we see the people of Israel groaning and crying for rescue from slavery in Egypt. Was God so high above us, the people of Israel, that God ignores, does God ignore them? Did he forgotten about the covenant he made with Israel? Not at all. Although he is holy and separate, he's not just looking down from a distance, but he's willing to come down. So that's what it is written in verse 24 especially. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. So this is really repeated and highlighted in these verses. Other version, NIV, according to NIV, it God was concerned about them. when he saw the people of Israel. So the fact that he remembered, it says that he remembered his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And the fact that he remembered doesn't really mean he had forgotten his covenant prior to remembering, like we do in our everyday lives. Because God always remembers, it is part of his nature to remember his covenant with his people. He heard what they're crying and knew exactly what they are going through, and God does remember his covenant with people of Israel. So he's compassionate with the people. This is even made clearer later throughout the chapter 3. So we can look at, for example, in verse 7 of the chapter, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. So again, this is repeated in verse 9. And now behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptian oppressed them. So this is the very reason why he appeared to Moses in the burning bush. So it's connected to his revelation before Moses in verse 8. I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of Egyptians and bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land. So we can also think of the same compassion that Jesus had towards those crowds of people when he was ministering among people. Matthew records, for example, in his gospel account, Matthew 9:36, that when Jesus saw the crowd, he had compassion on them. So their cry for help reached to his heart, and he heard their cry. He knew their suffering. That's why he came down to rescue them. So ultimately, Jesus coming down to save us is directly coming from this compassion that God has towards us, and which is clear in this passage. So this is a good reminder for us, I suppose, because we sometimes get tempted to feel that God does not really care. I don't know about you, but sometimes especially when we go through kind of like crisis moment in our lives, it's easy to feel that God doesn't care. I don't know if you have felt like that, but I used to feel a little bit bitter and cold. Uh, when things didn't go as I intended, and when things didn't turn out that I was carefully planning. So it was really that what I did wasn't properly appreciated by others. That was that it came down to that simple reason. So I used to feel that coldness and bitterness. So it's really good to be reminded that God does care, and He is a listening God, and He is compassionate. And really, this vision of compassionate God is should be the basis of our mission in this world. Our mission must have roots in this compassion of God towards these people. So this should be the driving force behind our zeal for mission and our efforts to engage in this world. So that's why this is a good reminder. So God is holy and compassionate. Thirdly and finally, in this chapter, we see that God is sovereign. He's in charge and complete control of all the events that are happening in this world by His power. We can see this in His instructions to Moses. We can see this in verse 19 in this chapter. So God told Moses that you shall go to the king of Egypt and tell him, let us go to the wilderness and worship our God just for 3 days' journey, so that we can make sacrifice to him. And he continues in verse 19 that, but I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. He knows exactly how the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, will respond to Moses' request. He knows how stubborn Pharaoh will be. So he continues in next verse, verse 20. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that, he will let you go. So God knows Pharaoh's heart, and God uses Pharaoh to bring his own power, show his own power and glory. So God is in charge. And there's another remarkable promise in the last two verses of this chapter. It is a promise that the people of Israel plunder the Egyptians. Usually, so this is really remarkable because usually it is the soldiers who won the war when they declare victory on the war. they will plunder their enemy by using the force and violence and all that plundering, do his their plundering. But in this case, it is very different. The people of Egypt will favor the people of Israel. So all they need to do is just to ask their neighbors. And they will bring all the precious things, gold, silver, and clothes. They can use them whenever necessary, and we see that the part of the plunder is used in the when they construct the this tent for God's presence. No, tabernacle was built later on in this Israel's journey. So this is very unusual. All of this, so unusual. Example that they God was in control and Israel were favored by Egyptians and they can plunder all the necessary things from their neighbors. We can see God's sovereignty also in Moses' life. At the beginning of this chapter, we see that Moses tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law in Midian. So do you know why he was there in Midian in the first place? It's good to remember. If you look at the chapter 2, we learn that Moses had to flee because of his failure. After being raised in the Egyptian royal family, according to Acts, Stephen's sermon, at the age of 40, he tried to identify with himself, with the Jew, so bringing up in royal family, Egyptians, but he identified with the Jew. He decided that he should be the one who rescue the people of Israel from the hand of Egyptians. So he killed an Egyptian trying to help his fellow Jew. The problem was that he thought nobody was looking when he killed Egyptian, but he was mistaken. Pharaoh, Egyptian king, came to know and tried to kill Moses. That's why he had to flee. As a result of this, Moses had to spend another 40 years living in Midian. That's a place very far away from Egypt or Canaan. So we can imagine, during those years in Midian, Moses getting married and he settled down, and he might be thinking that he was going to live there forever until the end of his life, you know. And he might well be feeling that he should give up his identity as a Jew. So his chance of engaging with God's mission was almost like gone. That was when God called Moses. According to God's plan, that was the right moment that he was called out. And that was when God graciously confirmed his Jewish identity, the people of God as Israel. That was when he said to Moses, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. So can you imagine how amazed Moses must have felt when he heard this God saying to him, I am the God of your father. These words must have been incredibly powerful and encouraging for Moses. So it's the same for us. Today, this same God is calling each of us to his mission in this world. How encouraging this is for us who might be feeling uncertain about how we should live. The God who is holy and compassionate is completely in charge of this world in our lives. We can respond to his calling, knowing and trusting that he will provide the best for us. May the Lord be with you.